21st chapter, or in the 21st chapter of 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 21, and that would be page 52. I don't know. Probably is, because 52, I'm still using the old one. Okay. So, if you want to turn there, that's where we'll be. And there's some interesting things in this I want us to look at and glean from. Verse 1, chapter 21 says, "Now David came to Nob to Ahimelech the priest." Now, where's David coming from? Help me. Who was here the last? Pardon? What's David doing? He's running for his life. Thank you. Saul's tried to kill him, and Jonathan says, "Yeah, Daddy's trying to kill you. You know, you better get out of here and get out of here in a hurry." So, so this is where we are when it says, "Now he came to Nob to Ahimelech the priest." And Ahimelech was afraid when he met David and said to him, "Why are you alone and no one is with you?" Now, you think the people in the kingdom don't know that there's hatred between Saul, or that Saul hates David. Let me put it that way. David doesn't hate him. But, I mean, that kind of word gets around that, hey, the king tried to kill, one of the best men he has. You know, that type of thing gets around. And now Ahimelech sees David. It's not the first time he's ever seen him, because David has been there to him before to inquire of the Lord. So he's not a stranger to him, but what scares him is David's by himself. So he says, "So David said to Ahimelech, the priest, 'The king has ordered me on some business and said to me, do not let anyone know anything about the business on which I send you, or what I have commanded you, and I've directed my young men to such and such a place.'" In other words, David says, you know, we're on a secret mission. I didn't bring the men in with me. They're in hiding. "Now therefore, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in my hand, or whatever can be found." And the priest answered David and said, "There is no common bread on hand, but there is holy bread, if the young men have at least kept themselves from women." Then David answered the priest and said to him, "Truly women have been kept from us about 3 days since I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in effect common, even though it was consecrated in the vessel this day." Now, let's look at this a minute and give you what I believe this is saying anyway. If you go all the way back into Leviticus, you understand that there's a table of showbread, and on that table, 12 loaves of bread, one representing each of the tribes of Israel, was placed on that table, was kept there a week, and then it was replaced. Well, the only people who could eat that bread was the priest. Okay? So that's why he's saying we don't have any common bread here. We do have bread, but it's the show bread. And no one but the priest is supposed to eat it. He said, but it's the old show bread. In other words, we put the new out. This is the old. So if the men have at least stayed away from women, he says, okay, we have. And then David makes an interesting comment. He says, in effect, I'm not going to go there. Okay. I'll let y'all form your own opinion on that one, all right? But I think, you know, a little walking around sense will tell you what he's talking about. But what David says is, well, the bread in a way is common. In other words, it's already served its purpose. It's old bread, you understand. So it says in verse 6, "So the priest gave him the holy bread, for there was no bread there but the show bread, which had been taken from before the Lord in order to put hot bread in its place on the day when it was taken away." Now, was it all right for David to take this bread? I want you to turn with me to Luke, the 6th chapter. And this is Jesus doing the speaking. Luke chapter 6, verses 3 and 4. This is where the religious people are complaining to Jesus about his disciples plucking heads of grain and eating them. Verse 3, "But Jesus answering them said, 'Have you not even read this, what David did when he was hungry, he and those who were with him, how he went into the house of God, took and ate the showbread, and also gave some to those with him, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat. So, by the Levitical law, it was illegal for David to eat that bread. But he ate it, and he didn't die, did he? Just throw that out and don't ask me for any further explanation because I don't know. Verse 7. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, note this, an Edomite. Just make a mental note of that. Where did Edomites come from? Esau. Was Esau in covenant? How was the covenant passed down? Who did it go through? Went through Jacob. But he was a descendant of Abraham, wasn't he? Okay? Now, I don't know if I should say covenant may not have been the right word to use. The blessing did not go through Esau. The blessing went through Jacob. That's what I should have said, okay? It says now, Doeg, an Edomite, the chief of the herdsmen who belonged to Saul. And David said to Ahimelech, is there not here on hand a spear or a sword? For I have brought neither my sword nor my weapons with me because the king's business required haste. That seemed a little unusual, huh, for a warrior to be without his weapons. So the priest said, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine whom you killed in the valley of Elah, there it is wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If you will take that, take it. For there is no other except that one here. And David said, there is none like it. Give it to me. He had already proven that sword, hadn't he? He had already cut the head off of Goliath with that sword, hadn't he? Now, verse 10 says, then David arose and fled that day from before Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. Who can tell me what nationality? Who are the people of Gath? What are they called? Gath is Philistine territory, okay? Now, the Philistines are battling with the Israelites constantly, aren't they? Right now, even under Saul's reign, they're having constant conflict with the Philistines. Now, you look at David's position here. He's having to run out of his own country, and he's going to a country that's fighting his own country, and he's been one of the head men to lead the Israeli army against the Philistines. That's somewhat between the rock and the hard spot, huh? But he goes to Gath, and it says, the servants of Achish said to him, is this not David, the king of the land? Did they not sing of him to one another in dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s? In other words, they know David's the one that killed their man Goliath from where? Gath? How about that? Isn't it interesting that that's the place he's running to? And David took these words to heart and was very much afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. In other words, David says, I'm in trouble now. Saul's wanting to kill me there, and now they're wanting to kill me here. So, look what he does. He changed his behavior before them. Pretended madness in their hands, scratched on the doors of the gate, and then let his saliva fall down on his beard. Then Achish said to his servants, look, you see the man is insane. Why have you brought him to me? Have I need of madmen that you have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? Now, David did some quick thinking there, didn't he? All of a sudden here, he sees he's in trouble, so he does a little play acting and pretends to be insane to the point that he even lets his saliva go into his beard, you know. I mean, he played the part to its full extent. You know, man will do a lot of things to save his hide, won't he? And that's exactly what he was doing. So they let him go. Yes?
Do you just reckon he didn't figure that Achish would treat him that way? I mean, why did he go to the end of the territory?
I don't know why he went. That interests me that he went especially to Gath after he had killed Goliath from Gath. It interests me that he went there and carrying Goliath's sword with him. That's right. I don't know why he went there, unless that was where he felt like if he got into the Philistine territory, this is my fault, okay? That if he got into the Philistine territory, that would be a protection from Saul. And maybe he didn't think about all the ramifications of going into the Philistine territory, other than he knew Saul would not go into that area to get him. Now, you'll find later on that he goes right back to this same man, which is interesting. And I don't know, maybe in his military endeavors he may have had some encounters or something with them. There could have been some diplomatic things going on that's not recorded, we don't know about. So I don't know all the detail of it. So when we get into verse 22, it says, David therefore departed from there, talking about from Achish and from Gath, and escaped to the cave of Adullam. So when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. Now that was probably a wise move on their part, because you don't know what Saul would do, and he's probably capable of killing anybody. If he'd kill his own son, I'm sure he wouldn't be above killing David's father or mother, you understand? So they come down, they find out where he is, and they come down there. Now I want you to listen to this. And everyone who was in distress, everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was discontented gathered to him, so he became captain over them, and there were about 400 men with him. I'm going to tell you, I've read that time and again, and I think, boy, God put this boy through some training. He got the rejects, and God figures if he can lead this type of people, he can lead anybody. Now, you look at that. I mean, here he is, the ones in distress, the ones that are in debt, can't pay their bills, and those who are discontented. How would you like to have that for an army?
That's what you got.
I'm not saying anything. Moving right along. Verse 3 said, then David went from there to Mizpah of Moab, and he sent to the king of Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, please let my father and mother come here with you till I know what God will do for me. So he brought them before the king of Moab, and they dwelt with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Isn't it interesting? He had to go out of his own country for protection. Now, I could go there, but sometimes your greatest danger is in the church. The world will often offer more security than the church does. And it shouldn't be that way. Verse 5, and just make a little note of this. It says, now the prophet Gad said to David, you'll find out later on that when David became king over all Israel, that Gad was his personal seer. Nice. Gad's already here with him, okay? Now the prophet Gad said to David, do not stay in the stronghold. Depart and go to the land of Judah. So David departed and went into the forest of Herith. Evidently he had a lot of confidence in Gad, and Gad was, as a spokesman for God, you understand, telling David what to do to protect him. So he had proven himself by the time David had gotten to the throne, didn't he? When Saul heard that David and the men who were with him had been discovered, now Saul was staying in Gibeah under a tamarisk tree in Ramah, listen to this, with his spear in his hand, and all his servants standing about him. I was thinking about that today. What was it that he always had to have the spear? We made some comment to it, but there's just a thought came to me today about that, is that Saul knew the kingdom was going to be taken from him. Samuel already told him that, hadn't he? And it was going to be given to someone else. I believe he was afraid of being assassinated. He didn't trust anybody. He knew the kingdom was going to leave him. So when you look, when you see Saul, you don't see him without his weapon, do you? How many times is it said he had his spear not close by in his hand? Living in a constant fear. Huh? So he says that he was there in Gibeah with his spear in his hand and all his servants standing about him. Then Saul said to his servants who stood about him, "Hear now, you Benjamites." In other words, that's the tribe of Benjamin. Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin, right? "Will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds?" In other words, Saul was trying to promote himself there, isn't he? He says, "All of you have conspired against me, and there is no one who reveals to me that my son has made a covenant with the son of Jesse." Now, does he know Jonathan's made a covenant with David? He sure does. He says so right here. He says, "There is not one of you who has stirred up, or pardon me, who is sorry for me or reveals to me that my son," now look at this, "my son has stirred up my servant against me." He's accusing Jonathan. "To lie in wait as it is this day." David's not lying in wait for him. He's trying to get David. So this is just blatant lying, isn't it? He said, "Then answered Doeg the Edomite, who was set over the servants of Saul." Remember him? He was the one there when David went to Ahimelech to get food, wasn't he? Okay. It says that, he said, "I saw the son of Jesse going to Nob to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him and gave him provision and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine." So the king sent to call Ahimelech, the priest, son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests who were in Nob. And they all came to the king, and Saul said, "Hear now, son of Ahitub." He answered, "Here I am, my lord." And Saul said to him, "Why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, in that you have given him bread and a sword, and have inquired of God for him, that he should rise against me to lie in wait as it is this day?" Now I want you to listen to the way Ahimelech answers Saul. I'm sure that this was gas on the fire. Okay? Although he is answering him truthfully. So Ahimelech answered the king and said, "And who among all your servants is as faithful as David?" Now that's a slap in the face. In other words, you're out trying to kill a man, and now you've got someone saying, "That's the most faithful servant you have." It says, who is the king's son-in-law? In other words, look, not only is he a faithful servant, I know he's part of your family. He's married to your daughter. "Who goes at your bidding," now look at this, "and is honorable in your house." Isn't it interesting that the priest is having to remind Saul the qualities of David? And it doesn't say it, you understand. He said, "Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Far be it from me." In other words, I've inquired for David before this. "Let not the king impute anything to his servant or to any in the house of my father, for your servant knew nothing of all this, little or much." And the king said, "You shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's house." Then the king said to the guards who stood about him, "Turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not tell it to me." But the servants of the king would not lift their hands to strike the priests of the Lord. Now I'm going to tell you, that really speaks something to me. And it's something that I see lost in the church today, that there's not a respect for the ministers of the Lord. Now, forget that I'm the one saying this, okay? I'm not on a bandwagon for myself, all right? I'm just telling you the disrespect that I see all over, all right? And these guards had enough respect for the priest that they wouldn't kill him. Now, I've been in situations, and I'll have to really guard how I say this. I've been in some situations where the church was struggling, okay? And you had, they'd chosen sides. Part was with the pastor and part were against the pastor, okay? And there's people in that church that would rise up and kill the pastor if it had been legal. And the position that I had at that particular time, from my perspective, they were both wrong. The people were as wrong as he was, and he was wrong. It was not a question about who was right, who was, whether or not they were wrong. They were both wrong. But the bottom line is I didn't seem to take anybody's side but God's side, which put me on neither side. And let me tell you what happens when you're on neither side. Both sides are against you. That's exactly right. I don't know why, but I've been in that position two different times.
I've been shark fishing a little bit. I say that it's kind of written too, because the people that you can get so quick to rally to do destructive things like that are like sharks. You chum the shark. You throw out that old dead, spoiled, rotten stuff, and that's what they want. Well, when
they pounce on it. Yeah. So you're saying there's a lot of buzzards in the... Yeah, okay. It is true. And you see that happen. But I appreciate the fact that these men had enough respect. They respected the position. Now see, here's the thing that we must realize is the positions are ordained by God, whether the man's right, wrong, or indifferent. And you're going to find that David has a tremendous respect for the position that Saul's in. He won't touch him. God anointed him for that. He won't touch him. Is Saul wrong? Absolutely. But does David try to kill him? Absolutely not. Now, with all that in mind, these guys had a fear of God, right? So they wouldn't rise up and kill the priest of God. And the king said, verse 18, the king said to Doeg, "You turn and kill the priest." So Doeg the Edomite turned, struck the priest, and killed on that day 85 men of war linen and ephah. Now, I mentioned earlier this guy's not in the blessing line, right? So what's he trying to do? Has no conviction. He'll kill anybody to promote himself. All he's trying to do is get favor with the king. So he doesn't care who he hurts to get it. Remind you of anything? Don't answer that, please. Okay? Just don't be guilty of it yourself, all right? We're not here to point fingers. We're here to govern our own lives. We get to verse 19. It says, "Also Nob, the city of the priest, he struck with the edge of the sword both men and women." In other words, he's just killing innocent people and children and nursing infants, oxen and donkeys and sheep with the edge of the sword. In other words, this guy goes on to kill in vengeance, doesn't he? Killing everything that belongs to him. Now, one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, that's the name you'll want to remember, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the Lord's priest. So David said to Abiathar, "I knew that day when the Doeg, the Edomite, was there that he would surely tell Saul. I have caused the death of all the persons of your father's house. Stay with me, do not fear. For he who seeks my life seeks your life. But with me you shall be safe." What's he saying? Look, Saul's after both of us. Stay here. We got a little army here. You'll be safe with me. We'll protect you. All right, when we go into chapter 23, it says, "And they told David, saying, Look, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah, and they're robbing the threshing floors. Therefore David inquired of the Lord, saying, Shall I go and attack these Philistines?" Now, isn't it interesting that even though he's running from Saul, he still feels a compulsion to protect the nation of Israel. So he inquires of the Lord, and he says, "Shall I go against the Philistines?" And the Lord said to David, "Go and attack the Philistines and save Keilah." But David's men said to him, "Look, we're afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we go to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines?" Now look at this. Who's David leading? Discontented, disgruntled people, right? They're after their own hide. And David's saying, "Look, these people down here in Keilah need protection. Let's go down and protect them." They said, "Boy, you crazy." But now right here's the mark of a leader. says, then David inquired of the Lord once again, and the Lord answered him and said, arise, go down to Keilah, for I will deliver the Philistines into your hand. And David and his men went to Keilah and fought with the Philistines, struck them with a mighty blow, took away their livestock, so David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. I don't know what he said to them the second time, but they followed him. I said they followed. In other words, he went first. He led them down there. He laid his life on the line and said, look, guys, if I'm willing to risk mine, why aren't you willing to risk yours? There's probably a lot that could be said about that. We'll move along. Verse 6 says, now it happened when Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, fled to David at Keilah that he went down with an ephod in his hand. Now, I don't want to just stop there a minute and show you something. I don't know if you remember this. If you'll go back and draw off of some of our previous study, you'll find that the priest, and this is what I want to point out here in this, and don't visualize this as the exact image, okay? This is an artist's perception of the description written out, okay? This is the high priest, and originally the ephod was for the high priest. Later on you see priest wearing it, you see David wearing it, Samuel wore an ephod. But the ephod is this vest-like thing that goes over the robe. In that ephod, I don't know if you can see from there, but there's a stone on either shoulder called the Urim and Thummim. And this is how they inquired of God. Now, there's very little said and not a whole lot to find out in research about the Urim and Thummim. Most scholars believe that these stones turned colors for the yes or no or whatever, but that the stones, there's something to do with the stones that gave the will of God. Because you'll find that this is mentioned, you'll see this mentioned several times in the Bible. We won't make a decision until someone comes with a Urim and Thummim to where we'll know what the will of God is. Okay? So when Abiathar came to David, if I understand it correctly, he had this ephod. This is probably the priestly ephod that he had, the high priestly ephod. He was in that lineage of high priests. Aaron's sons, okay? So that's why David was inquiring of the Lord. I said all that just to simply say, they were saying David inquired of the Lord, and then it goes on to say how he was able to do that because Abiathar had the ephod with him. Okay?
So you're saying that when David said, Lord, shall we go up? And God said, go and smite the Philistines and save the Keilah. And then David said again, and then God said, arise, go down. That God was speaking through the Urim and Thummim.
Well, it could have, I believe, definitely through this, and I'm going to show you why. But I also remember that Gad was with them too. So it could have been in two ways. But now note this. It says, now it happened when Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, fled to David at Keilah, that he went down with an ephod in his hand. I don't believe that was just put there to tell you that he had an ephod, but I believe that's put in there to tell you that's how David's inquiring of the Lord. Okay? And the reason we say that's because of the precedence set before where they went through the priest and inquired, and it was saying that he had the ephod or the Urim Thummim and whatever, okay? Now it says, in verse 7, Saul was told that David had gone to Keilah, so Saul said, God has delivered him into my hand, for he has shut himself in by entering a town that has gates and bars. Then Saul called all the people together for war to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. Isn't it interesting? He is mustering the entire army of Israel to go after, what, 400, 600 men? When David knew that Saul plotted evil against him, he said to Abiathar the priest, bring the ephod here. Now, this is why I say that he's inquiring through this, okay? Then David said, O Lord God of Israel, your servant has certainly heard that Saul seeks to come to Keilah to destroy the city for my sake. Will the men of Keilah deliver me into his hand? Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? O Lord God of Israel, I pray, tell your servant. And the Lord said he will come down. Now, I don't know how he's speaking, but I know that he's inquiring before the ephod, okay? The Lord said, yes, he will come down. Verse 12, then David said, will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hand of Saul? And the Lord said, they will deliver you. Isn't that interesting? You've just risked your life to save their hide, and God said, they'll turn you over. They'll sell you out, boy. It is. It happens all the time. People you lay your life down for, the very ones that will turn around and crucify you, okay? So David and his men, about 600, arose and departed from Keilah and went wherever they could go. Then it was told Saul that David had escaped from Keilah, so he halted the expedition. And David stayed in strongholds in the wilderness, remained in the mountains in the wilderness of Ziph. Saul sought him every day, but God did not deliver him into his hand. Isn't that something? Boy, you're talking about somebody afraid of somebody. Saul was afraid of David. So David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a forest. Now, I want you to look at this. Saul's trying to kill him. It says, then Jonathan, Saul's son, David in the woods and strengthened his hand in God. Now, we talked quite a bit last session on the covenant between Jonathan and David, the covenants. They made more than one covenant. Okay? Now, here, Saul and the army of Israel is trying to find David, and Jonathan knows how to get to him. Isn't it interesting? Jonathan has access to him, and Jonathan's a soldier, you understand. It says, Jonathan, Saul's son, arose, went to David in the woods, and encouraged him, is what it says. And he said to him, do not fear. Now, I want you to listen to this. I mentioned this earlier, but here's the Scripture to prove it. He said, do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. Now, in other words, he's saying the covenant's good, buddy. You're safe with me. You think about that. The safest guy David could be with is the guy that was in the enemy's army, because he'd die before he'd tell him where he was. He said, you shall be king over Israel. Now, this is the man who's in line to be king. And he says, you'll be king over Israel. Now, note this. And I shall be next to you. Even my father Saul knows this. He said, he knows that. Well, what's Jonathan trying to do? He's saving his life. He's sparing his life. He's hiding him. He's covering him. He's encouraging him. Just hang in there, David. You just stick this thing out. You're going to the throne. Saul can't do a thing about it, and I won't be in your way. I'll be supporting you when you get there. I'll be your right-hand man. What a couple. So the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. Here they cut another. And David stayed in the woods, and Jonathan went to his house. Now, why would they continually cut covenant? I'm going to tell you something. I believe the bond kept getting stronger and stronger between the two of them. Just stronger and stronger. And they just kept cutting covenant after covenant, reassuring each other that life for life. You understand? And neither one of them could trust the other with his life, and did. Okay? It says, then the Ziphites came up to Saul to Gibeah, saying, is David not hiding with us in strongholds in the woods, in the hill of Hakkalah, which is on the south of Jeshimon? Now therefore, O king, come down according to all the desire of your soul to come down, and our part shall be to deliver him into the king's hand. In other words, you come down, we'll deliver David to you. And Saul said, blessed are you of the Lord, for you have compassion on me. Well, that's just words without any kind of power behind them, because anybody that's trying to sell David out is not going to be blessed of the Lord, are they? It says, please go and find out for sure and see the place where his hideout is and who has seen him there. Now look at this. For I am told he is very crafty. Yeah, I believe he knows that by experience, doesn't he? See therefore and take knowledge of all the lurking places where he hides, and come back to me with certainty, and I will go with you, and it shall be if he is in the land that I will search for him throughout all the clans of Judah. So
So they arose and went to Ziph. Now this is David's own people. You understand? He's of the tribe of Judah. And this is his own tribe that's selling him out. Just to get favor with Saul, you understand? So it says that they arose and went to Ziph before Saul, but David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon in the plain on the south of Jeshimon. When Saul and his men went to seek him, they told David. Therefore he went down to the rock and stayed in the wilderness of Maon. Now you just remember that wilderness of Maon. That's Maon's going to come back up here in the 25th chapter, okay? And when Saul heard that, he pursued David in the wilderness of Maon. Then Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. So David made haste to get away from Saul, for Saul and his men were encircling David and his men to take them. But a messenger came to Saul saying, "Hurry and come, for the Philistines have invaded the land." Now look at this. Saul's left his country unprotected just to satisfy his own flesh, okay? So therefore Saul returned from pursuing David and went against the Philistines. So they called that place the Rock of Escape. Then David went up from there and dwelt in strongholds at Engedi. Well, it's break time. I'll stop there and then we'll pick up with chapter 24 after the break.